You turn to Marketplace for the latest news about what's happening in the economy and how it affects you and your community. When you donate to support our nonprofit newsroom, you can also get something a little more tangible. We have a great lineup of donor thank you gifts right now. A shrinkflation mini tote bag, water bottles, mugs, hats, and a lot more. Contribute any amount to make a difference and pick up one of these gifts. Go to marketplace.org/donate.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Ascensus, helping people dream bigger, aim higher, and save more with financial confidence. Unleash the power of your retirement savings plan with innovative technology that makes things easy, top-notch service from experts who care, and flexible solutions that can grow with you. For more than 40 years, Ascensus has been helping savers achieve their goals. We can help you achieve yours, too. Learn more at Ascensus.com. That's ASCENSUS.com.
Remote work could be making holiday travel easier. From Marketplace, I'm Sabri Benishore, in for David Brancaccio. Thanksgiving week is traditionally the biggest travel week of the year, and experts say this year's holiday might be the busiest since the start of the pandemic. But you know who may not have to travel this year? Remote workers. A lot of them are already where they want to be. And that could take some of the pressure off from the long lines of traffic and crowded airports. Marketplace's Kristen Schwab reports.
Thanksgiving travel has traditionally happened over a small and intense period, usually Tuesday through Sunday.
What we're seeing this year is the peak actually started, if you will, last Friday.
Robert Mann is an airline industry analyst. He says because some people can now work remotely, they're choosing to fly earlier, either to spend more time at their destination or save money. Haley Berg, an economist at the travel app Hopper, says Thanksgiving flight prices were up 30% this year, but travelers who had more flexibility saved on average $100 per ticket.
It also saves some stress of those long lines and really busy days,
which in turn helps airlines that are facing a shortage of pilots and other workers.
Having demand spread out over more days does allow airlines and airports to better manage staffing, keep up with the networks that they're flying,
and manage flight delays that can snowball into bigger disruptions. She says it doesn't mean you won't come across any hiccups traveling, but it could have been worse. I'm Kristen Schwab for Marketplace.
It is today Black Friday. Traditionally, the start of the holiday shopping season, although that start date has been creeping earlier these past few years with Prime Day in October. But for retailers, Black Friday and Cyber Monday are still barometers of how consumers are feeling and how much they're likely to spend on gifts. Here's Marketplace's Nova Sappho.
The last 2 months of the year are crucial for retailers. They can account for as much as 20% of annual sales. And companies such as Target and Walmart have signaled that they expect to do relatively well during this holiday season. Analysts say consumers will spend more this year, about $500 on average between today and Cyber Monday. That's according to Deloitte. But it remains to be seen if the increase in spending will outpace inflation, which is currently running at an annual rate of more than 7.5%. Retailers also have too much inventory, especially discretionary items such as electronics, and they've been discounting to move merchandise. With higher prices, consumers could end up spending more but buying less, leaving inventories still on the shelf. I'm Nova Sappho for Marketplace.
All right, let's do the numbers. The FTSE in London is up 0.3%. Dow and S&P futures are up around 0.2%, with the Dow future up 63 points. NASDAQ futures are down less than 0.1%. And the yield on the 10-year Treasury is 3.715%.
You turn to Marketplace for the latest news about what's happening in the economy and how it affects you and your community. When you donate to support our nonprofit newsroom, you can also get something a little more tangible. We have a great lineup of donor thank you gifts right now. A shrinkflation mini tote bag, water bottles, mugs, hats, and a lot more. Contribute any amount to make a difference and pick up one of these gifts. Go to marketplace.org/donate.
With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Ryssdal. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.
A lot of developing countries have two big problems that are at odds with one another. They need to spend money on the consequences of climate change, think natural disasters and environmental degradation, but they are also, many of them, deeply in debt. There is a new way of trying to deal with both at the same time. Anatoly Kermanayev is a reporter at the New York Times who recently published a story on something called debt for nature swaps. Good morning.
Good morning, Sabri.
Can you help us understand how this works? And you wrote about the case of Belize. So you got a country with a debt problem. It wants to spend money on conservation in this case. How do you put the two together?
At the very simplest, you can think of it as refinancing a mortgage, right? You have existing debt load and you're trying to exchange it for something that hopefully will have low interest rates and you can pay it at a later date. So in the case of Belize, it was approached by a local marine biologist who suggested them a plan. Basically, her nonprofit, she worked for the Nature Conservancy of the U.S., would lend money to the government of Belize to repay the debt. And in return, some of the savings that the government of Belize would get from that transaction would have to go towards marine conservation.
So you have an environmental group that says, we will lend you the money to repay your debts and use some of it to spend on conservation. But where does an environmental group like the Nature Conservancy or whoever, where do they get $350 million?
They went to Credit Suisse, a big global investment bank, and they asked them to participate in the transaction. Credit Suisse gave them the money, gave the Nature Conservancy the money, and on their side, they, you know, basically issued new debt themselves.
But if a country has high interest rates that it's, you know, trying to get out of, trying to get better terms on, usually for developing countries, that's because there's a certain amount of risk. So if it gets new loans, does that mean that, you know, the environmental group is taking on risk but not getting compensated for it, or likewise Credit Suisse?
The way that Nature Conservancy and its partners were able to get around this is to get involved the development arm of U.S. Treasury, which guaranteed the transaction. So basically, the risk of Belize became the risk of the United States. So if one of the parties doesn't do their part, they can be taken to international courts and sued for it.
Now, in this case, $350 million, that is obviously a lot of money. But of course, just a piece of that gets spent on conservation. The United Nations estimated $125 trillion would need to be spent globally by everybody to reach net zero emissions by 2050. So, I mean, how far can this kind of model go?
You know, Belize has been the largest transaction of this kind to date. And the idea is that now that the model, you know, has been worked out, it can be scaled up, so to speak. You know, the amounts can keep increasing. The second and perhaps more interesting aspect of it to me is the way it changes mentality of stakeholders. What is valuable to us here? You know, what kind of development do we want? What kind of a nation do we want to be? Do we want to be based on extraction of natural resources and mass tourism and cruise ships? Or do we want to base our financial growth, economic growth on more sustainable models that can also bring in money into the public coffers?
Anatoly Kermanayev is a reporter at the New York Times. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Sabri.
Our digital producer is Redmond Carilippio. Our engineers are Justin Dueler and Nick Esposito. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
Hey everyone, it's Rima Khreis, host of This Is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This Is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This Is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.